we're going to turn now to a topic that probably won't be appropriate for all, because we're going to talk about sex. And we don't want to attach any shame to the subject, because there's more than enough of that already. Now, many women of a certain age grew up in the 50s, maybe, hearing girls who had any kind of sex before marriage were bad girls. But for many evangelical women, it's worse than bad. It's damning for them and the men and boys they've led astray. This thinking is part of a purity movement that grew in the 1980s and 90s with books against dating, pledges, rings, and the warning that every sexual thought and activity, alone or with others, will make you impure and unwanted. Linda K. Klein grew up in that culture as a devout evangelical. She prayed, led study groups, went to Bible camp. By the time she was a teenager, she was so traumatized by the purity message that she nearly died before seeking treatment for her Crohn's disease, because she wanted to prove that she was a girl of spirit, not flesh. Eventually, she questioned the message, spoke to other women. Her new book is Pure, Inside the Evangelical Movement That Shamed a Generation of Young Women and How I Broke Free. She joins us from New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
And let's just set some ground rules here when we talk about the evangelical movement. This is the single largest religious group in the U.S. You're writing about the white conservative subculture you grew up in. And tell us more about this purity industry with groups like the Silver Ring thing. What is it?
So the purity movement, which is what these organizations were a part of, very quickly turned into a purity industry, which these organizations were also a part of. So that's when you started to see things like purity rings and purity pledges and purity curricula, even purity-themed Bibles. So try not to associate your sexuality and your salvation when a sixth of your Bible is about the importance of purity.
This is amazing. You write about this Bible from the Silver Ring Thing group. In and among the real Bible verses is this instruction: keep your clothes on, zipped and buttoned. And what are girls in particular told?
The message that girls get, that if you are impure or deemed impure by the community, because ultimately it's the community that decides whether you're pure or impure, that there's really no place for you in the community.
And again, you rush to write that there are many women and men that you've heard from who embrace this. But you met people that had such trauma because it was being told that you were loved unconditionally. That's how Jesus loves. Except you were hellbound if, you know, you had one little flaw that made you impure. So it wasn't. It was conditional love.
Yeah, whether or not you were hellbound from a spiritual perspective was debatable. Most people would say you could still go to heaven even if you were impure, but that might be after experiencing hell here on earth, because there's no place for you within this community if you're impure.
Well, you talk about kissing a young man and being so traumatized by that you broke up with him for fear that that would ruin you for life.
Yeah, shame. When I say shame, I'm not talking about bashfulness. I'm not talking about shyness. I'm talking about feelings of worthlessness. So feeling that you are fundamentally and in your totality bad because of how people perceive your sexual purity is no small thing. Shame can make people feel desperate, feel hopeless. It can lead to suicidal tendencies. And certainly one thing that I saw in many of my interviewees is, and that I've experienced myself, is that the extreme shame and fear and anxiety for many people started to manifest in ways that mimicked classic PTSD.
Now, again, this is sensitive material and it's not for all ears. But one of the women that you met, this purity thinking was so pervasive in her home that when she was raped by her own brother, the parents blamed her?
Because she had not fought back. They said that they would never know who was really to blame, and so ultimately they blamed the two of them. You know, the ethic is one man and one woman in marriage forever. You know, there's no mention in there about violence. There's no mention in there about abuse. So when violence and abuse does happen, it still is subconsciously assessed by that same sexual ethic. Did it happen between one man and one woman in marriage forever? Yes, okay, then it couldn't possibly have been rape, even if, you know, somebody describes a deeply violent experience. Did it happen outside of one woman, one man in marriage forever? Yes, then both parties are impure and both parties are, you know, in some way at fault. And particularly women and girls who within purity culture are taught that it's their job to maintain the sexual purity of everyone because they hold the threat. So when women and girls are violated, oftentimes we go back and we say, okay, what did she do wrong?
It's not just in the evangelical faiths. It is in other faiths, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You write about Elizabeth Smart, who was had been kidnapped. And she said in speaking at Johns Hopkins University in a trafficking and sexual violence conference, after the first rape, I was crushed because who would want me now? She was taught something having to do with a stick of gum.
Yeah, one of the most overt ways that the purity message is taught is via object lessons, and many object lessons are about food. So you're shown a stick of gum, and this stick of gum represents the sexually untouched woman or girl. And then you chew that stick of gum. It's forever changed. And then you invite others. Who wants to stick this stick of gum in your mouth now? It's already been in someone else's mouth. It's full of saliva. Nobody wants to have that stick of gum anymore. And just imagine how that would feel to somebody who's in the room who has already had any sexual experience, because in the purity movement, it's not just sex that makes you impure. It could potentially be sexual thoughts, sexual feelings, other people's sexual thoughts or feelings or behaviors toward you that you're said to elicit.
There's a lot of cultural references. One woman says to you, you know how the Dementors in the Harry Potter books, the Dementor characters, they bring out horrible memories. The Dementors to her became like the church. So, you know, people are driven away from the church because it brings back all these horrible memories of how they were shamed.
One thing that really surprised me was how many people told me that they would walk into a church and they would break down into tears. It had become precisely such a dementor, as you were talking about now, a reminder of that shame, the place where the trauma of repetitive shaming year after year happened to them.
Well, and when they go to get help, many therapists have not heard of this, so don't know about what's being called post-traumatic pastor disorder. But it sounds like we're already seeing shifts, because Josh Harris, the young man who wrote that I Kissed Dating Goodbye book that became this, you know, shaming manual for so many young women, ultimately ended up, first of all, admitting that he'd been abused as a child. Maybe that's where some of this came from. And he ended up online talking to people on Twitter about, you know, apologizing for what he had done.
Yeah, it's been an incredible journey to watch him wrestle with his role within the purity movement. And I think he's still wrestling to this day. It's interesting because he really has come out and owned that his telling people that they shouldn't date, he was very instrumental in a lot of people's lives within the purity movement in making people think that actually even dating was a road to impurity. And hopefully he'll continue to wrestle and continue to deconstruct some of the ideas that he put out there.
Well, some of the Twitter handles that have popped up in these conversations that he's sometimes having with young women who are online saying, this is what this book did to me. Hashtag kiss shame by. Hashtag life after IKDG.
I Kissed Dating Goodbye. Yeah, that was his biggest seller.
So there's been this pushback. There's also movements, anti-purity movements, if you will. Tell us about one.
Sure. I really love the No Shame movement. And this is a website, first and foremost, that is a place for people to go to share their stories of having grown up within the purity movement and how it's impacted their lives. And it also aggregates a lot of the stories that are out there already in the media. There is something bigger happening right now. And I think the core of it is around people rising up and beginning to tell their stories and beginning to come into voice. We are told that that if our experience isn't blissful and perfect, that it's because of our sin or because of our psychosis, because we are doing something wrong. More and more people are coming to the realization that no, something wrong was done to me, and we can stand up together and create change.
Well, you know, you talked about how great it was for you over 12 years to talk to all these other women who tell incredible stories, and they're in the book. But going to write the book was a different thing. You went home and your mother tried to make the case with you that your telling the story was akin to, I think, mass slaughter. Because if people misconstrue what you say and get bad feelings about God, that isn't good for your salvation. And you might have been operating as an arm of Satan. He's the prince of lies, your mom says. I don't want him using you.
Yeah, there are high stakes for questioning this message, or really questioning any core central messages to evangelicalism. You know, for my mom, the fear that she had that I would lose my salvation really came out of a deep, deep place of love. You know, my mom, the thing that she cares about most in the world is that when she dies and goes to heaven, that I am right there next to her. And she's coming to a much greater peace around it.
What are you hearing from people who feel wrongly characterized?
What I'm hoping is that the evangelicals who are on the ground, the people in the pews, I'm talking about the youth pastors who are working with the kids. I'm talking about the chaplains who are working with the college students. You know, these people, when I talk to them, know that this is happening. They see the shame. They feel the shame. And what I'm really hoping is that those people on the ground will be able to be heard by the celebrities of evangelicalism. If the groundswell were to come forward and start to say, here's my experience, you know, I think we could see a tremendous amount of change.
Well, we'll see. Linda K. Klein, again, the book is Pure, Inside the Evangelical Movement That Shamed a Generation of Young Women and How I Broke Free. Linda, thank you so much.
Thank you.